Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. If you go to MobiusStripPress.com, you can find out how you can download these podcasts and find our support documents and links. Prior to the election, I spoke in detail on nationalism and how we need to stop surrendering our individual sovereignty and our state sovereignty to the federal government in a lot of roles, responsibilities, and powers that they've assumed or usurped, which are unconstitutional. And I can prove this academically as well as in context to the framing documents and so forth. And so nationalism is something that obviously the federal government is exploiting within context to all other governments. Are coming in and going, well, we're superior in all things. Read the Constitution. We're superior in all things. The Constitution is the highest law of that. Yeah, that's superior in all things delegated to the federal government. They're only superior in that, and all other things, the states are superior, and the people are superior in all other things that not delegated. So who else supports or who else exploits nationalism? Get a little excited here. Well, there's lots of people, but of course, the secular progressives, they use the education system to inculcate and brainwash us into believing that we were founded on national principles, that the federal government had all these powers, and that's why everybody believes in nationalism. The globalist think tanks in society, such as the CFR, Bilderbergers, and so forth, they all believe this as well. And they're happier than pigs in mud, understanding the fact that we don't know any better and that they're taking advantage of us and they're getting away with it. The Democratic Party leads the political agenda, the party establishment of all parties. As a matter of fact, I've gone into libertarian parties, I've gone into constitutional parties, I've gone into a variety of different parties, and they all claim to have, you know, a uniqueness, but they're not. Every single party, especially parties that are established at a national level, are nationalists because their focus is at the national level, not at the little r Republican government that was established. The news media and even Fox News love to propagate, and I consider the propaganda machines, they love to propagate the idea of nationalism. The entertainment industry, and I like to use the metaphor, the organ grinder and the monkeys on the string, because it is he who pays the piper calls the tune, if the old adage is correct. And so somebody down or upstream in the entertainment industry is making hits or making, you know, popular stars out of making sure that they sing the tune that they want, or they'll never get the airtime. And so there's very few that buck the entertainment industry. And when they do, they basically get blackballed when they say, hey, this is all incorrect. When you find a conservative in the entertainment industry and they're still doing work, they're only doing work because of the merit of the work that they do. Like John Voight is just one off the top of my head who definitely stands up and has conservative values and bucks the organ grinder in the relationship of the entertainment industry. There are others, such as the education system, which I've already talked about, and they beat this into our children's heads, that we have a national government that has all of these powers to do whatever they want to do. Here's the real surprise. The other group that I'm going to mention that exploits nationalism, I want you to think about this. These are the conservative entertainers and pundits. These guys may be noble, but what they're doing is really nefarious because they're getting you to focus on the national level and coming to, like I said in the previous show right before the election, that they're getting you to bring your ire to the national stage when actually you need to be taking your ire to your state capital and your state legislatures. why is it that they're supporting nationalism? Well, first off, they have no vested interest in fixing this problem. They make millions of dollars in getting you to focus on their marches in Washington, D.C. And I don't want to name any of these people by name, but if they're on a syndicated radio show, there's a likelihood that they make and their market is based on you being fixated on the national problems. And they're not pointing you back to the states and fixing this problem. They want you to fix the problem where it can't be fixed on the national stage. So it's almost counterintuitive. It just hurts my head that they're doing this. Again, these may be very noble people with the most noble intent in their heart, but they're only compounding the problem. They play on the passions of the individual to accomplish nothing and waste a lot of time. I mean, there are plenty of them that have marches, and other than the fact that we all get together in Georgia, Alabama, D.C., or wherever their march is going to be, they make us a part of something that makes us kind of feel good. But when we go home and we look, what was really accomplished? Not one shred of unconstitutional government was undone. This is why this show, Reclaiming the Republic, is about education and about educating you regarding our real hybrid constitutional republic. I could be sitting here telling you and peddling the concepts that I have in my first book, We the People, Whose Constitution Is It Anyway? In my second book, The Strategy to Convene a Convention. Of course, these are all the We the People series. And if you don't read those books, you won't get to the minute detail, but I'm trying to put it into content here. I'm not trying to become a millionaire. I'm actually trying to save our Constitution. The Constitution is a contract, and it must be complied to. The non-compliance is rendering it useless. Here's another surprise. Another majority, or another very large, powerful entity that is undermining our Constitution, and it's happening right underneath our very noses, is the National Christian Leadership. They've been selling this nation downriver, and I exposed this in my first book, We the People, Whose Constitution Is It Anyway, when the Second Awakening occurred in this nation. And that was in the early 1800s, around 1820, 1830. This organization, and I'm calling them out, and I ask you to go Google, look this stuff up. I talk about this on a Facebook post regarding my pre-election post on Facebook regarding unity equals individual liberty and subjugation, or I should say division equals subjugation to the state. Go look at that Facebook post. It's a very long one, but down into the meat of it, I talk about the Circle of Protection. Who are these guys? This is an organization that is made up of national Christian leaders. Go look at the signature list. I have these links within this post. Click on those posts and look at what churches these guys are representing. They're representing the Catholic Church, the Lutheran Church, the Protestant Church, the Episcopal Church, the Evangelical Churches, all sorts of churches of Christ. I don't know what church isn't listed, but I'd ask you to go look, and then you'll find out who's selling us downriver. And how do I mean by they selling us downriver? What they are doing is they are making state welfare an election issue. In other words, they're abdicating their responsibility. I'm going to repeat this several times. They have the responsibility of taking care of the temporal welfare of their parishioners, and that's why we pay tithes and offerings. And I'll even get into some of this, but I just want you to understand that if you look down at the local level, you don't see any of this going on. And I don't know if your local pastor, local religious leader is saying go to the state government instead of helping you, but he should be helping you. And I don't see any of this at the local level, but at the national level where your tithes filter up, these guys are trying to make sure that the state government ramps up the welfare system. And what that means is they're sending their parishioners, their flock, to the government to become slaves of the state. Because once people get on to the teat of government, the government has no plan of weaning or no design of making anybody self-sufficient. There's nothing greater in this world than a person being able to stand on their own two feet and accomplishing all these great things that they're capable of doing. That is a God-given thing. It's not pride. This is self-worth. This is something that I think resonates in all of us. When we create something, when we do something, it's from the fruits of our labor. And when we have our religious leaders throwing us to the state to take that away from us, they're only enabling the statist ideology and creating a pathway in getting everybody to believe that socialism is the righteous thing to do. And I'm here to tell you that if Christ was alive today, he would be saying, just like he said in Malachi, if you go into the Malachi scriptures, Malachi 3, 8 through 12 speaks of the role of tithes and offerings in the church. And that it's the church's responsibility to tend to the temporal welfare of the parishioners. This is why I submit that these leaders are abdicating their responsibility and serving mammon. As I can hear in my ear, I'm coming up on a hard break. But I want to continue this, and I'm actually going to get into what Madison says when we come right back. Thank you very much, and stay tuned. The inclusion of general welfare in Article 1 and also in the preamble of the Constitution was strictly an application of ambiguity for the overall general government. Very specifically in Article 1, it regarded the uniformity in how taxes would be applied and the support to the states. In other words, the federal government wasn't designed to supplicate one state over another. It had to be equal. The uniformity clause is probably the one clause that is violated left and right. A great example of that is when one looks at the bailouts that are granted by President Obama or Bush or Clinton and the first Bush. Federal and corporate welfare are violations of the uniformity clause because it creates a greater burden, but it only benefits one particular state or a couple of states. And the big bailout, TARP bailout, and those types of bailouts that have recently been occurring are really targeted towards big banks or New York City and others. And then they throw a little bit out towards the other states with highway funds or what have you to make you feel good that they're doing something for you. But they're literally robbing us blind, and they are stealing from our future and our posterity. But bottom line, they are violating the uniformity clause, and they cannot do that. They have to be uniform in how they apply the general welfare that they speak of in the Constitution, or that Madison actually goes into great detail on this in the early debates of Congress during the Cod Fishery Bill granting bounties. And this actually happened on February 3rd, and I'm going to read It happened on February 3rd, 1792. So this is the very, very beginning, and Madison is schooling the House of Representatives in Congress because they're looking at this Constitution, and they weren't the privileged ones of being at the Constitutional Convention, and they're just reading into what this general welfare means, and they can do all these great things. And Madison basically gets up and admonishes them and schools them in his speech regarding this cod fishery bill and granting bounties. And it was on February 3rd, 1792. So let me read 5 of the 8 paragraphs. I want to fly through this because I only have so much time. This is Madison speaking. I, sir, have always conceived, I believe those who proposed the Constitution conceived, it is still more fully known and more material to observe that those who ratified the Constitution conceived that this is not an indefinite government, deriving its powers from the general terms prefixed to the specified powers, but a limited government tied down to the specified powers which explain and define the general terms. It is to be recollected that the terms common defense and general welfare, as here used, are not novel terms first introduced into this Constitution. They are terms familiar in their construction and well known to the people of America. They are repeatedly found in the old Articles of Confederation, where, although they were susceptible of a great latitude as can be given them by the context here, it was never supposed or pretended that they conveyed any such power as is now assigned them. On the contrary, it is always considered clear and certain that the old Congress was limited to the enumerated powers, and that the enumeration limited and explained the general terms. I ask the gentlemen themselves whether it was supposed or suspected that the old Congress could give away the money of the states to bounties to encourage agriculture or for any other purpose they pleased. If such a power had been possessed by that body, it would have been much less or have become very different character from the universally ascribed to it. This, sir, seems to be demonstrable, for if the clause in question really authorizes Congress to do whatever they think fit, provided it be for the general welfare of which they are to judge, and money can be applied to it, Congress must have power to create and support a judiciary, establishment and a jurisdiction extending to all cases favorable in their opinion to the general welfare in the same manner to the general welfare in the manner as they have power to pass laws and apply money, providing in all other way for the general welfare. I shall be reminded, perhaps, that according to the terms of the Constitution, the judicial power is to extend to certain cases only, not to all cases. But this circumstance can have no effect in the argument, it being presupposed by the gentleman that the specification of certain objects does not limit the import of the general terms. Taking these terms as an abstract and indefinite grant of power, they comprise all the objects of legislative regulators, as well as fall under the judiciary article in the Constitution, as those falling immediately under the legislative article and the particular enumerations of objects in the legislative article does not, as these gentlemen contend, limit the general power. Neither will it be limited by the parliament or by the partial enumeration of objects in the judiciary article. There are consequences, sir, still more extensive, which, as they follow dearly from the doctrine combated, must either be admitted or the doctrine must be given up. If Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, and parish and pay them out of the public treasury. They may take into their own hands education of the children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. They may assume the provision for the poor. They may undertake regulation of the roads other than post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police, would it be thrown under the power of Congress, for every object I have mentioned would admit of the application of money and might be called, if Congress pleased, provisions for the general welfare. In short, sir, without going further into the subject, which I should not have here touched at all, but for the reasons already mentioned, I venture to declare it as my opinion that were the power of Congress to establish in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundations and transmute the very nature of the limited government established by the people of America, and what inferences might be drawn or what consequences ensue from such a step, it is incumbent on all of us to consider. Well, if you go back and read that for yourself, and I know that's kind of hard and it's difficult reading that vernacular or that type of vocabulary and listening to it, but if you go back and read that, clearly he talks about how hard limited the federal government is, and even the judiciary can't listen to all cases, that they're limited to those things that are enumerated within the Constitution. General net welfare was never intended to apply to beyond the enumerated powers and was constrained by the Uniformity Clause, that all dealings with states had to be equally administered or distributed. One could compare conservative entertainers and even these organized Christian leaders as preachers of false doctrines. Sure, they have noble intent and their heart may be in the right spot, but they are fighting to destroy the Constitution and the Republic, and they don't realize it. And this is because they are getting the Republic to turn its back on the Republic and focus on the nation. The progressive agenda has continued to take ground even after decades of conservative talk shows and grassroots organizations. Again, I've mentioned this before, one must read Madison's veto with the remaining I'm tripping myself up. One must read Madison's veto that I talk about several times. It's the 1817 veto of the bonus bill. This is where Madison basically humiliated his fellow congressman, and I think that's one of the reasons why the father of the Constitution is recognized by a monument called the Library of Congress. In reading this, and I'll be getting to this in a future show, but when you read this veto, he clearly calls out the four mystical clauses and how they have no ability to inject any new roles, responsibilities, or powers, or what I like to call portals, for the federal government to assume and usurp powers. Those four mystical clauses are the General Welfare Clause, the Commerce Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clause, and the Supremacy Clause. And in this veto, when I read it, I'm going to try to do some on-air analysis, but I want to read it in its entirety. And then in a future show, when I read this, I'm going to give you some analysis as to what he's saying here, so that it all makes sense, so the epiphany occurs, that the only way the federal government can assume any new role, responsibility, or power is through the Article 5 process. It can't be via fiat from an executive order. It cannot be from some ruling and opinion from an oligarchy of robes. It can only come from the states, and that's why it only lists the states in the Article 5 process. And what I hear in my ear means that I've come to the end of this show, and I hope you continue to keep listening every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1. And we will be reclaiming the Republic. This is Reclaiming the Republic. Thank you very much, and God bless.